Just completed the first argument on our calendar, and we are preparing to proceed into the second argument on our calendar. The case is Amber Brown versus Hennepin Healthcare Systems, Inc., case number A22-0700. This morning, appellant will have 15 minutes to present his argument, and respondent will have another 15 minutes to argue, and then appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before you begin your arguments, please identify yourself and the party you're representing for the purpose of the audio recording that we're making this morning. And if there's any other identifying information that you would like us to know, please do let us know when you introduce yourself as well. It looks like you're both ready to go. You ready? Okay, then appellant, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Marshall Tanick. I'm the attorney representing the relator Amber Brown in this proceeding. Mrs. Brown is in court this morning with her husband, Dan. Mrs. Brown is a 44-year-old married woman. She's been associated with Hennepin Healthcare Services and its predecessor, Hennepin County Health, for about 20 years. She is a hardworking, diligent, and according to the performance reviews, highly successful individual who has shown a commitment to diversity, and those are reflected in her personnel reviews. She was terminated in earlier this year as a result of an anonymous screenshot that surfaced and was submitted to management at Hennepin Healthcare that depicted her, Mrs. Brown, and two colleagues at a Halloween party some 15 or 17 years ago, and no one knows exactly the date because it did happen so long ago, but it was believed to have happened at least 15 years or so ago at an off-duty, unrelated to work, Halloween costume party in which Mrs. Brown and two of her colleagues dressed up as the Supreme singing group. They had blackface on and were giving a musical tribute to the Supremes, totally unrelated to work. And that was never promoted, advanced, shown, even known by Mrs. Brown that it was even, that there was any picture of it. It's not on social media. Somebody had a screenshot of it, some anonymous person had a screenshot of it, and in 2022, 15 years or so later, that screenshot was submitted to management at Hennepin Healthcare. At the time, Hennepin Healthcare was going through some real serious issues.
And Mr. Tanick, I'm just going to stop you. I think we're aware of the record. And I mean, as I understand this court's rule on cert role on cert review, I mean, it doesn't matter whether we agree with the respondent's decision or not, but why is it that we should decide that it needs, the discharge decision needs to be reversed?
Sure. Good question, Your Honor. There are four general prongs to certiorari review. We think this case satisfies all of them. There is no substantial evidence supporting the termination of Mrs. Brown, firstly. Secondly,
well, let me stop you right there because the argument that I'm hoping you can address is that there doesn't really need to be in that Ms. Brown was an at-will employee. I'm wondering if you could talk about that for a few moments.
Right. Well, and the respondent has cited a few cases that stand for what they say is that proposition. Those cases are quite distinguishable, as we note on pages 16 and 17 of our reply brief. The cases cited by Hennepin Healthcare involved at-will employees who were challenging or contesting or seeking to pursue claims under either internal business policies, or in one case, a temporary employee who was seeking a relief under a contract. This case is different than that because Mrs. Brown is not a mere at-will employee. The statute that created Hennepin Healthcare in 2007, apparently after this incident happened, elevates her from the role of an at-will employee. As part of the process under the arrangement which Hennepin Healthcare was spun out of Hennepin County, Minnesota Statute 383B.1 5.914 provides certain rights that employees have who were previous employees of Hennepin County. Those rights are enumerated in the statute under Subdivision 1, Section 3. Among those rights that are enumerated are that there must be a, quote, appeals process for any individual employed at Hennepin Healthcare.
And what property interest does that establish?
Well, it establishes the right that an at-will employee has no rights at all other than statutory rights for discrimination or whistleblowing. In this case, the employees of Hennepin Healthcare, including Mrs. Brown, have the statutory right. They're given a right by the legislature to go through an appellate process, which wasn't granted to her, incidentally.
Well, I thought she, in fact, did appeal, and that there was a consideration and a decision made to affirm the discharge decision.
That was not what we deemed to be an appeals process. The statute...
Well, there again, it seems like you're asking us to read into the words an appeal process to establish a right that I don't know how this court would define when the statute doesn't define.
Well, we've given case laws to what constitutes an effective appeal. The statute doesn't enumerate what an appeal is, but the term appeal is well cited in case law and other ways as to what constitutes an appeal. In this case, what Hennepin Healthcare allowed Mrs. Brown to do is to ask for reconsideration. That's not an appeal. Anybody can always ask for reconsideration. There is no appeal process set up here. There is no way. An appeal process generally involves presenting facts, presenting an argument, having an impartial decision maker make a decision regarding an appeal. That wasn't afforded her. In fact, the person to whom she, what Hennepin Healthcare does is you can ask for reconsideration. Well, that's not an appeal. That's just asking the person who made the decision to rethink the decision. That doesn't provide any kind of appellate rights, which the statute mandates. Incidentally, in this case, the person who denied the reconsideration was the same person who investigated the charge against Mrs. Brown. There's a clear conflict there, and that undermines any notion that there was that she was given an appeal process as mandated by the statute. So she's more than just a mere at-will employee. She's an employee who the statute, who Minnesota legislature has given rights to an appeal process, and there was no appeal process granted here. As I indicated, the investigator, incidentally, the investigator, his name's Sean Tolfrey, who investigated this for Hennepin Healthcare, he, along with others in the process, during that process, initially determined that Mrs. Brown shouldn't be disciplined at all. The human rights, the human resources manager, when this anonymous screenshot first was first submitted, the human rights manager didn't even know what blackface was, and she said, "Well, I had to Google it. I didn't even know what the issue was about." The unit manager, Mrs. Brown's unit manager, said that she shouldn't be disciplined. She should be given some education, some sensitivity training as to what the issue is concerning blackface. I want to point out at this point, it's mentioned in our brief, neither Mrs. Brown nor we are condoning the use of blackface. That's not the issue here, and it's not in any way an attempt to justify what she did. I think it is important, though, to recognize that at the time this occurred, back in the early part of two decades ago, blackface wasn't viewed by the public with the heinous characteristic that it rightfully is viewed today. Times have changed, context have changed, and we cited in our brief innumerable people, politicians, celebrities, and others who engaged in blackface back then, not knowing or not realizing what they should have realized perhaps and what we now realize today because of our greater sensitivity, that it was wrong to do so.
So you're suggesting that even when viewed through today's lens, that there's just not substantial evidence to support the discharge determination?
Well, not through today's lens, but in this case, it happened 15 or 17 years ago. I think you have to view the context in which it occurred. Furthermore, there was no policy against that at all. Mrs. Brown was terminated purportedly because she violated some policies that were adopted in 2017. Those policies are rather vague, general workplace, respectful workplace conduct policies. They address essentially what happens in the workplace. They don't even address this kind of conduct, which is off-duty conduct, unrelated to work, that happened 15 years before 13 years before the policies were adopted.
If your client's an at-will employee, for the sake of argument, it doesn't matter, right?
Well,
why they decided to discharge.
Well, the statute requires that she be given an appeals process. She wasn't given an appeals process. So at a minimum, and we say that the determination should be reversed altogether because there was no substantial evidence. But furthermore, the basis for the decision was an erroneous legal theory. In fact, there was no legal theory. What's noteworthy is that in the decision to terminate her, they don't say why she's being terminated, and the request for reconsideration, as they call it, there's no reasoning or rationale or findings at all given. And that is clearly violative of the certiorari principles, that there has to be some reasoning, some findings, in order for this court to engage in a meaningful review. The fact that they didn't have any reasoning, they didn't have any findings, suggests two things. One, that there was no substantial evidence to support the decision, and secondly, that the decision was based on an erroneous legal theory. And the third element of certiorari, of course, is just whether a decision is reasonable or not. Given the context of this case, and I won't recite all the facts and circumstances because you're well aware of that, but given the context of this case, off-duty conduct 17 years before, Mrs. Brown wasn't aware of the impropriety, and neither was management. As I indicated, the unit manager did not want to take any disciplinary action against her, and the labor relations director, Sean Tolfrey, said it's too risky to take any disciplinary action against her when this anonymous screenshot surfaced.
I understand what you're saying about the appeal process, but given that at-will status, if we just assume that she was an at-will employee, do we even get to the question of the reasonableness of the termination through certiorari?
Well, I think you can, and again, we'd contend she wasn't just an at-will employee.
The statute gives
her rights that at-will employees don't have. So this is different than the few cases, including an unpublished case cited by the respondent, insofar in those cases they were pure at-will employees who had no statutory rights. Mrs. Brown does have statutory rights. But I understand your question to be, assuming she's an at-will employee,
yeah.
Yes, we believe that certiorari can still be brought here, is appropriate here. The certiorari provides a remedy for an individual when there no other remedy exists. Initially, as noted in our brief, we pursued a claim before the Office of Administrative Hearings under a just cause standard because Hennepin County, which preceded Hennepin Healthcare, had a just cause standard. We proceeded under a just cause standard, and ultimately the Office of Administrative Hearings rejected our claim on grounds of lack of jurisdiction. So that left only this remedy of certiorari, and certiorari is a remedy when available to someone who has no other remedy, and we tried another remedy, which proved to be unsuccessful. So certiorari can be utilized here because she's an at-will employee, we maintain, and because she's not an at-will employee and has statutory rights. But even so, it's the only remedy or route available to her. And as I was indicating before, Mr. Tolfrey, who made the decision who was the investigator and the head of the Labor Relations Department, said it was too risky to terminate her. This happened too long ago. There is, quote, no clear nexus, unquote, to the workplace. And he recommended against disciplining Mrs. Brown. The CEO of Hennepin Healthcare crisply responded, quote, 100% agree. The 100% agreement by all the management people somehow was 180 degrees converted into a termination. Why was she terminated at that time? Because the media had been concerned about some other issues that were happening in Hennepin Healthcare, including some issues with the use of ketamine, the drugs for excited delirium that the police were using. Hennepin Healthcare was in the crosshairs of media reporting about that.
Can I ask you that, now that you're bringing up media reporting, one of the arguments you assert in your brief is that the respondent deprived your client of her liberty interest in clearing her name.
Right.
Is it fair to, one of the arguments respondent makes is that issue's not properly before us because your client didn't ask for that sort of hearing until after the discharge decision had been made, in fact, quite some time after the discharge decision was made. How do you respond to the argument that the question of a liberty, deprivation of a liberty interest, is not properly before this court?
Well, it's impossible to request a name-clearing hearing until your name is besmirched. So you can't really request a name clearing hearing until you've terminated. So it would be superfluous for Mrs. Brown to request a name clearing hearing before she was terminated. So the timing of that isn't really relevant, I don't think. And that I think that the lack of a name clearing hearing when her name was besmirched is an element of a property right. It's not the only property right in this claim, but I think it's an element that adds to the erroneous legal decision that bolsters the claim for certiorari in this case. Not only was there insubstantial evidence, but the decision is an arbitrary and capricious one, given the fact that all of the management people concurred that she shouldn't be terminated, including the CEO, who said I 100% agree that she should not be terminated. Yet a week or so later, she gets terminated. That's in the context of the media concerns that Hennepin Healthcare, and Mrs. Brown essentially became a scapegoat for that, because she was terminated at the same time that the emails and other communications between the management personnel indicated that they were very concerned about the media dealing with some different issues.
In terms of her liberty interest in having her name protected, does it make a difference that the media, Star Tribune, came forward with this story and got the information rather than the respondent having a press release indicating that your client had been discharged?
Well, I don't think there has to be a press release to have a name-clearing hearing.
But, I mean, the fact that it was the Star Tribune that publicized the issue, does that make a difference that it wasn't the respondent?
They publicized the issue, but they got information as part of that from talking to Hennepin County healthcare personnel. That Star Tribune reporter was investigating various issues, and they got that information through their contact with Hennepin Healthcare. But the name-clearing hearing, as I said, is not essential to Mrs. Brown's status as more than just an at-will employee. I think it's important, I think, but it's not the only reason why she wasn't an at-will employee. And I will return again to the statute that gives her those elevated appeal rights, which weren't granted here. And Mr. Tolfrey, who was the investigator who recommended that it was too risky to terminate her, was the same person who made the decision on reconsideration to terminate her. So again, the whole process was shot through with lack of substantial evidence, unreasonableness, arbitrary and capricious behavior. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from counsel for a respondent whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Katie Lynch, and I represent the respondent, Hennepin Healthcare System, Inc., or HHS. There are two main reasons that this court should affirm the discharge decision. First, the threshold legal issue here today is the relator's at-will status. And second, HHS followed its procedures for terminating an at-will employee, so there have been no procedural irregularities. It's been long established in Minnesota that all employment is presumed to be at will. And this applies equally in the public sector. And what it means to be an at-will employee is that the employee can be terminated for any reason or no reason at all. And it also means that they do not have an entitlement to due process, to a due process evidentiary hearing.
Are there any cases in Minnesota, and I haven't found one, that involved a relator or plaintiff or appellant who was subject to 383B.914, who had this right to an appeals process?
I don't believe there's any cases interpreting this particular provision of 0.914.
And so why doesn't that change the situation and make the relator something other than an at-will employee?
Yes, Your Honor. So we cited several cases in our brief, I believe at page 21 through 22, where a mere procedure does not create that property interest. So for a constitutionally protected property interest, there needs to be an independent source, like a statute or a contract, that creates a legitimate entitlement to rights to your job. And I would note that that's an objective standard. So it's not subjectively what the employee believed or thought. It's a legitimate entitlement pointing to an independent source, like a just cause provision. Now, I would point out that the legislature knows how to create property interests. 383B.38, the statute that was at issue in the Office of Administrative Hearings, that's a perfect example. The legislature wrote in a just cause right, a complete procedure for pursuing a termination appeal. That's not what the legislature did in 0.914. In .914, it just calls for an appeal procedure, but does not require just cause to terminate or otherwise limit
what management's. What does it mean then? I mean, how are we to apply that statute in a way that gives it any meaning?
Yeah, so what the legislature called for was an appeal procedure, and for HHS to adopt its own personnel policies and HR system. And we have that in the record here at Exhibit 10. We have that policy that sets forth the appeal procedure. That appeal procedure includes the opportunity to have a termination decision reviewed by the HR director and department management. Those individuals can either uphold the discharge, they can modify it. For example, they could reduce a termination to a suspension, or they could completely rescind the discipline. And they have the ability to award back pay if the decision is reversed. So that is an appeal procedure. Management, in this case, that procedure was followed, and management considered the appeal that Ms. Brown submitted. In fact, I think the record shows that they spent quite a bit of time considering it, over 2 weeks. And given everything that she said and everything that was before those decision makers, they decided to uphold the discharge decision. So that's the decision that's on appeal here today.
What about the argument that Mr. Tanick made that this is really not a genuine appeal? This is nothing more than a reconsideration. It doesn't really matter that they took 2 weeks to issue the decision on that reconsideration.
I respectfully disagree with my opponent's argument on that. I think that this was a meaningful appeal, and that the record shows that Ms. Brown was able to present her arguments and that management considered it. What I believe the relator is asking for is a due process hearing. And so that circles back to the at-will issue. Because Ms. Brown was at will, she did not have a due process right. And so what we're talking about here is not a full-fledged evidentiary hearing that a due process just cause employee would get. And again, the legislature, had they wanted that appeal procedure to be a due process procedure, they know how to do that. There's other examples where the legislature creates a due process hearing for public employees. The example one would be the Veterans Preference Act. There's other statutes in the 383B chapter for other counties like Ramsey County that have a just cause proceeding. So I think essentially what the relator wants this court to do is rewrite .914 to add in a just cause due process hearing. And that's, you know, not the role of this court, and that's not what the legislature wrote.
But we also have the issue here of the name-clearing opportunity, mm-hmm. right? And I think Mr. Tanick's argument is that, you know, when you add that to the mix, then relator is not an at-will employee because it's undisputed that there was adverse publicity and she never had an opportunity to address that in a public way to try to clear her name. How do you respond to that argument?
Your Honor, I would point you to our addendum. She was given an opportunity to publicly clear her name at a public open HHS board meeting, and she declined. And we responded to that after she asked for it.
Is that the same kind of hearing that, for example, some of the other cases, Schleck and Crooks and other cases have envisioned?
So I think a liberty name-clearing hearing is different than a due process hearing that a just cause employee would get. So the cases that we cited in our brief with regard to the liberty interest is exactly what it sounds like. It's an opportunity to clear your name, and it doesn't require a full-fledged evidentiary hearing. And if you'd like me to cite that, I don't have my brief right in front of me, but we did cite cases that stand for that proposition versus somebody who has a property interest in their job. That's a different story where there is pre-termination, post-termination process that is due. The liberty interest, I believe, is separate than the property interest. Those are two different things.
Counsel, do you agree or disagree that the appellant as an at-will employee has more rights because of the statute than the regular at-will employee, the majority of the cases that you cite in your brief? And do you think, I mean, I guess I'd be interested in your response to appellant's argument about that because these additional rights have been given in the statute, that that somehow takes it out of the realm of at will. Like, how, I guess, how do you interpret the fact that these additional rights have been given in the statute?
Yes, Your Honor. We do cite cases where there is process, but the employee is still at will in the public sector. So again, kind of reiterating that a process, a mere expectancy of review, which is what Ms. Brown had, does not create a property interest. It has to be something that creates a right to the job, like a just cause provision, something that limits management's ability to take employment action against an employee. So,
point as opposed to the legislature saying if you want to terminate, you need to be creating processes for public employees.
Right. So that's right. So the way the legislature, for example, 383B.38, that's a perfect example where the legislature says, management, you can't just fire somebody on a whim, or, you know, it's the normal at will rules do not apply. You have to prove employer just cause. That creates a property interest. We don't have that here. That's not in the .9914 statute. And I think, again, that the legislature, if they had wanted to give that just cause protection or property interest for HHS employees, they knew how to do that. And I would also note that there's a broader impact here. This is not just about Ms. Brown. HHS is a huge organization with 7,000 employees, and about 50% are not in a union, so they're impacted by this statute, and they're all at will, according to our interpretation.
Would you agree that this is a different kind of at will than what we kind of commonly understand to be at will? An at will employee is, putting aside the whole rights part of the discussion, an at-will employee is typically not entitled to an appeal. An appeal when they're demoted. It seems to me that this is sort of a hybrid situation, and I understand the cases you've cited regarding rights, but I'm having trouble understanding why the statute affords someone the right to an appeal while maintaining the at-will status.
I don't have the legislative history on hand, but that's what the legislature wanted to do. They wanted to give an appeal process, and I would agree. We're not disputing that she had a right to an appeal, and that the legislature calls for that. And I think the record shows that that procedure was followed. But legally, the legal issue here is whether that creates a property interest. And I do not believe the case law or the record supports the relator's argument that she has a property interest. That's a threshold issue. Before we even get to a due process hearing, you have to establish that property interest. And there are other cases from this court. One of them is the Pena case, I don't know how to pronounce it, on page 22 of our brief, where the personnel rules, this is a public sector case, the personnel rules provided for, quote, an appeal hearing in the event of dismissal. And this court held that that was not sufficient because the rules also contained an at-will disclaimer, just like the one that we have in this case. So the handbook that Ms. Brown signed acknowledged that there's no contractual right to the job, and the handbook contains a classic disclaimer that says, quote, employees may resign their employment at any time for any reason, and HHS reserves the same right. That is an at-will employment relationship. That's the definition of one. And so just like in the Pena case, here we do have a process. Ms. Brown was afforded that process, but that is not legally sufficient to create that property interest.
And are you suggesting it doesn't matter that it's the legislature that gave her that appeal process? That doesn't change our analysis of whether it's at will and whether there's a property interest at stake?
I do not believe so. Again, the legislature knows how to do it if they want to do it.
How do you respond to Mr. Tanik's argument that, you know, setting aside these other bases for certiorari, for a reversal under the certiorari standard of review, this just wasn't a reasonable decision given the record evidence that the CEO and others repeatedly said discharge is not the appropriate response to this set of circumstances?
So first of all, I don't believe the court needs to address that because of the fact that she is at will, and that's dispositive. So she could be terminated for any reason or no reason at all. But to address your question, Your Honor, I think that there's more than enough evidence in the record to support this discharge decision. Not only, and I think this is not even subject to argument, not only is the conduct itself patently offensive and bad behavior, but on top of that, and a significant factor that HHS considered was the way that Ms. Brown responded today in 2022, right, when she was given an opportunity before any decision-making had been made to address the photo and explain herself, tell her side of the story.
Are you talking about during the investigation?
Yes, sorry. And that's in Exhibit 3. So she was given an opportunity to respond before a decision had been made. And I want to point out two places in the record, Exhibit 27 at 183 and Exhibit 3 at 24, where it's mentioned twice, the important factor of Ms. Brown's failure to acknowledge or even understand why this would be offensive, and the fact that she was a leader of a public-facing community paramedic program. We're talking about HHS as a public safety net hospital that serves the most diverse and vulnerable patients in the state. And HHS felt that that was important, that here we have a leader that's representing HHS in the community who doesn't understand why blackface would be offensive in 2022. So those factors together, and this is all supported in the evidence, I think provides more than enough to uphold the discharge decision if the court decides to go to this issue. We don't think the court does have to go to this issue because her at-will status is dispositive. And I would also note with that, you know, I think in the time that has passed that that Ms. Brown has doubled down, and I don't think we have evidence that she's fully understanding the harm that her conduct would have to diverse patients like the ones that HHS serves. She continues to say that it was a tribute and that it was respectful and that she was blissfully oblivious. That, to me, does not show that somebody has fully taken account for her actions as a leader. I see my time is up. Unless there are further questions, we do believe that at-will status is dispositive, and we would respectfully request that the court affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Tanik, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. What happened to Mrs. Brown was wrong. She was wrongfully terminated. The facts of this case cannot possibly support a determination that that Hennepin Healthcare's decision was in any way reasonable. And the best way to understand that or recognize that is the words of Hennepin Healthcare's own management personnel, who said it was too risky to terminate her. It happened long ago. There was no, quote, nexus to the workplace. And the CEO 100% agreed with that. So to suggest that Mrs. Brown was somehow properly or fairly terminated is just plain wrong and not supported by the record here at all. It was an unreasonable decision. She wasn't a typical at-will employee with no rights. At-will employees just have no rights except discrimination or whistleblowing or some particular statute. In this case, the legislature specifically, and the statute came out of the transition from Hennepin County to set up Hennepin Healthcare Systems, although Hennepin Healthcare Systems is a public entity, but it's spun out of Hennepin County. As part of that process, the
Council, why isn't the appeals right here more akin to the statutory rights that are given to employees for you can't be terminated for a discriminatory reason?
Well, the statutory right here is unusual. It's an unusual right. At-will employee, there's no statute to give at-will employees appeal rights. That's why they're at-will employees. In this case, the Hennepin Healthcare employees, and Mrs. Brown was one, Hennepin County employees, which Mrs. Brown was, had various rights, just cause rights and the like. As part of the creation of this new entity, the legislature mandated that those employees be given an appeal process. Now, granted, the legislature didn't define that, but Mrs. Brown wasn't given any kind of appeal process. All that Hennepin Healthcare said is, well, if you don't like our decision, you can ask for reconsideration. Well, anyone can always ask for reconsideration. That doesn't satisfy any kind of appeal process. And we've kind of laid out what an appeal consists of. At a minimum, an appeal consists of some determination made by an impartial decision maker, coupled with findings and reasoning that can be reviewed.
Sounds like a due process hearing.
The standard that may be different than just cause, but an appeal process necessitates some kind of reasoning, some kind of findings, and that didn't happen here. All that happened was that Mr. Tolfrey, the investigator who recommended against her termination, rubber-stamped that determination and said the determination stands without any reasoning, without any findings at all. She was entitled, the legislature presumably intended, that she be given more than just somebody rubber-stamping a decision made by management. An appeal process is only meaningful. This process that was accorded her was a hollow process at best. It just allows them, if you don't like the decision, ask us to reconsider it. Well, an appeal process in any meaningful way requires some type of impartial decision maker applying some kind of standard. It may be just cause, it may be something else, making a decision, promulgating some reasoning or findings coupled with that decision that justify the decision. In this case, there was no reasoning, no findings by Mr. Tolfrey, the man who has said thought she shouldn't be terminated in the first place. I suspect that the reason that there was no findings and no reasoning is because there wasn't any reasoning given to that decision. And that contradicts the certiorari process that there was an erroneous legal theory. There was no legal theory at work here. Hennepin Healthcare hasn't articulated any reasoning for terminating Mrs. Brown other than saying, well, she's not entitled to any reasoning because she's an at-will employee. Yet the legislature has instructed an appeal process to be created. And I would defy anybody to find a statute, because I can't, maybe they exist, any Minnesota statute that grants an employee an appellate right who is an at-will employee. The very granting by the state legislature of a right to appeal elevates that individual from a mere at-will employee with no rights to an employee who has some rights granted by the legislature. This isn't a handbook case. This isn't a contract case. This is a case in which the legislature has directed that this particular entity specifically provide an appeal process, and there was no meaningful appeal process provided her. Coupled with her right to a name-clearing hearing, she was more than just an at-will employee, and therefore the decision below was incorrect. It was violating a number of prongs of certiorari. It should be reversed, and Mrs. Brown should be reinstated to the position that she did so well as a highly successful employee for 20 years. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you both for your very helpful arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the